Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at Mercury's Kazemi in the sign of Aries. If you don't know what that means, it means that Mercury is at the heart of the Sun or conjoining the Sun through its retrogradation, which is a critical phase of development in the Mercury retrograde cycle. So we're going to talk about the general significations of Mercury Kazemis to refresh in case you've never learned about the Mercury Kazemi before. And then we're going to take a look at what makes this particular Kazemi so important during a month where so many big things are happening, including the upcoming Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. We're going to talk about how this Kazemi relates to that in particular. So that is our goal for today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections. It helps the channel to grow. It creates community. It's really nice to see what you guys have to say. If you have a story to share during this very intense month of April, astrologically speaking, go ahead, use the hashtag grabbed, tell us the transit, tell us your story, or feel free to email it to us, grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. And of course, you can find a transcript of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Got a couple of promotions today before we get into our content of the day. And the first one is the upcoming live event. Go to the live talks page on nightlightastrology.com. You will see that on April 18th, I'm giving a talk called Uranus in Love. Just before Jupiter and Uranus conjoin, I'll be giving a talk on the significations of Uranus in love, sex, and relationships, whether that is through a natal placement in your birth chart or that is through a transit of Uranus to something in your birth chart. We're going to be talking about what Uranus has to say and what Uranus has to do for us in healing and personal growth when it comes to love and relationships. So you register for that talk. It's April 18th, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can get a link to the recording if you can't make it live. So when you register, you get both of those things after you sign up. The other thing that I am promoting right now is my first year course called Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. That class begins coming up in June, along with the Horary course and the Year 2 program. All three courses start in June. This one starts on June 16th. This is the first year program. If you stick around after today's talk, you will hear a video that I made that I've tagged on to the end of these talks, where I dive into everything the program includes in greater depth. The one thing you need to know that's important is that there are 30 classes on the year. We have 12 guest lectures outside of that, those 30 classes. We have an interactive group forum discussion where you can ask questions, and there's a tutoring staff that always answers within 24 hours. We have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. You can email me throughout the year at any point in time with questions. There's a ton of bonus material, optional quizzes, flashcards, reading, listening to supplement the curriculum in our program. And those breakout study sessions with our staff are really helpful for you if you need a little extra attention. So we try to make the program really supportive. It is a wonderful in-depth immersion into ancient Hellenistic astrology. And it starts on June 16th. Remember, at the bottom of the page, you can find the early bird sale saves you $500 off. That runs up until the start of class. The payment plan allows you to spread it out over 12 months if you prefer to do that with the tuition. And we do have need-based tuition assistance. So be sure to check that out if you are someone who could use a little extra help to make it happen. We like to make sure that nobody is priced out. The other thing that I am promoting, just as a kind of reminder, is Ashley's Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts at the end of this month. If you go over to skyhouseherbs.com, you know she comes on my channel and also teaches Roots and Spheres with me. Her Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. That is a one-year remote learning program, so you can follow along with the recordings, and then there are study sessions where she gets together for Q&A. Just kind of take it at your own pace. It's a one-year program, and I have run a bunch of interviews with her in the past weeks talking about the program, but if you have any questions, head over to skyhouseherbs.com and check it out. All right, that is it for our promotions today. I'm really excited to get into talking about this Mercury Kazemi because it is a very potent one. Here it is on the screen, and I'm going to highlight it. Whoops, I have to go back in time. Here we go. So we are talking about today, Wednesday, April 10th. You can see that the Kazemi is coming through right here. And if we run this forward just a little bit, between today, Wednesday, April 10th, and tomorrow, Thursday, April 11th, you will notice that the Kazemi is completing itself. By Friday, it is passed. It has the Mercury has passed through the heart of the Sun by Friday. So if you spread this out a little bit, you know, you probably start feeling this when it gets to within about 3 degrees, which was yesterday, Tuesday, April 9th. Today, you're feeling it really intensely as the day goes on. Tomorrow, it's exact on Thursday, April 11th. And then by Friday, it's passing through. So this is a significant Kazemi for a few reasons, and we're going to talk about those today. And we're going to try our best to connect them to some of the major events that are happening this month. We've had a solar eclipse in Aries this week. That's significant because Mercury is retrograding in Aries and is now conjoining with the Sun, who was just eclipsed in Aries. That's a big deal. So what is this Mercury Kazemi in Aries all about, especially considering that it's also closely linked to the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction coming about on the 20th of this month? Well, let's talk about the general significations of any Mercury Kazemi. So you kind of have just a reminder of what this is all about. Whenever Mercury turns retrograde, it is doing so from the position of an evening star, which was associated with ancient astrologers with the qualities of nighttime, the nocturnal realm, or broadly speaking, yin energy. When Mercury retrogrades, it starts to fall back into it looks like it's sinking in the western sky in the evening, and it starts to move backward toward the sun and the place of the setting sun. And as it does that, you're going to see it disappear. It comes under the beams of the sun, and then it's combusted, sort of burnt up. And during that phase, during the stationing of the retrograde, all the way through the combustion, it's as though everything Mercury represents, which is very specific to each individual birth chart, by the way, in terms of the rulerships Mercury has, the house of Aries in this case in your birth chart. So it never works to be too generic with Mercury retrogrades, not only because Mercury retrograde is very specific to your chart, but also because every Mercury retrograde is different based on the sign, based on aspects and dignities and so forth. But as Mercury is retrograding backward into the sun, it's as though Mercury's significations undergo a kind of death and rebirth process. Sometimes it's very destructive and chaotic and difficult, and impediments arise, frustrations, a change of circumstance or events, a reversal of fortune, delays and setbacks. Again, it's not uncommon for Mercury retrogrades, for any retrogrades, to be frustrating at the outset of the retrograde when the planet stations and starts moving backward. Because for ancient astrologers, that means that the planet is falling back into the primary motion of the sky, rather than having its own secondary motion against the grain of the zodiac, which sort of means that it's losing its volition. The larger hand of fate is taking over. So that can be frustrating, which is why when planets turn retrograde, we often feel like things go out of our control. Insofar as we are identifying ourselves as the controllers, which is problematic, and astrology teaches us again and again to be careful of that. But anyway, Mercury's retrograde undergoes this transformation when it finally reaches the conjunction to the sun. Through its retrograde, it conjoins the sun, and that was thought of as the starting point of a new cycle. Astrologers have oriented the start of the cycle during the direct conjunction or the retrograde conjunction throughout history. So there's a little bit of debate about what the true starting point of Mercury's cycle is, but it doesn't matter because it's a reset point regardless, in direct motion or retrograde motion. But in this case, the Kazemi that's happening through the retrograde motion of Mercury represents the moment of death and rebirth itself, from which point Mercury starts to recover, it starts to emerge from under the beams of the sun, and it starts to rise as the morning star. That process then transitions Mercury and Aries into a more young, daytime, diurnal kind of position, which actually is probably a little bit better suited for Mercury in the sign of Aries, because Aries is a pretty young place. It's the fiery place, fiery masculine place of Mars. So in a way, right now we're dealing with, we're dealing with a Mercury who is trying to be tactful, but it's not necessarily Mercury and Aries' nature to be super tactful and relationally sensitive, as the yin is more likely to do. So Mercury and Aries in the evening star position is a little bit of an awkward space for Mercury. It's like, you know, it's like someone who wants to blow the bugle to announce battle, but it has to do a saxophone instead, you know, like a jazz. It's like, or has a harp rather than, you know. So anyway, all jokes aside, like the fact that Mercury is being reborn in this moment into a stronger, more vocal, assertive position makes a lot of sense. Remember that this Mercury retrograde is, as we're going to see in a second, is also hosted by Mars, who's just passing through a conjunction with Saturn in Pisces, which can be a place that is stickier and requires more tact and fluidity on an emotional level. And that's not exactly what Mercury in Aries is best at, right? But it's being ruled by a Mars who's in that kind of space. It's also in an evening star position, but now it's dying and it's being reborn. When the planet is being reborn and it's at the heart of the sun, it is as though that planet is also imbued with the power of the sun and given new life, which can mean that, messengers and messages come through in a loud way on a psychic level. It can also mean that there's an empowerment of speech or mind, that there's clarity and illumination. It can bring kind of inventive qualities mentally, and breakthroughs in speech and communication. And it can also bring a kind of delusional sense of empowerment, getting overly confident or almost like I'm the king when actually you're just the messenger. I'll tell you a story, and I've told this a few times before. Some years ago, there was a young man who watched this channel who became, and he commented all the time, and it was obvious that he was probably struggling with some mental health issues. You know, I didn't know, but I just kind of wondered. And he, during a Mercury Kazemi in a fire sign in Sagittarius, this was around the pandemic, if I'm remembering correctly, he became delusionally convinced that he was the reincarnation of Jesus during the Mercury Kazemi in Sagittarius and ended up taking his own life. But before he did so, on that very day or within 24 hours during the Kazemi, he emailed me with all these dictates about things that I needed to go and say on behalf of him, Jesus Christ, on my YouTube channel. And it turned out that there were some people that he was connected to that I knew on Facebook. And I sort of did not a wellness check, but I sort of was like, is he okay? Like, what's going on? Because I saw that we knew some people in common. And they let me know within a day or two that on that day later, he had taken his own life. And he indeed, I think, I forget if it's still called bipolar disorder or if it's called something else now. But anyway, that's apparently what he had been, that was a diagnosis that he had received and had been, trying to get off. I think he had like self-taken himself off meds or something like that. But I tell that story because that was one of the most eye-opening experiences of a Mercury Kazemi that I had ever experienced up until that point. It made me realize that what comes through a Kazemi can be so potent, and the archetype that is conjoining with the sun, in this case Mercury, can get so imbued with the power of the sun that it can almost become overly confident and even delusional, or it can express symbolically in terms of something like what had happened with this young man, which was really tragic and unfortunate. So anyway, Mercury Kazemi moments are associated with a tremendous empowerment of Mercury at the heart of the sun. We do have to be careful. Here we are in a fire sign again, and it's not unlike that one in the sense that I'm not saying that something of that magnitude will happen, but more like you have to be careful that as Mercury's being reborn at the heart of an exalted sun in Aries, and it's transforming into the yang side of things, there could be a way in which we get high on our an idea or our strength, or that there's a kind of assertive, muscular bravado that comes through that's just like too much, it's like, I don't care who I have to steamroll in the process because I'm right. And I it's kind of like sometimes people get really high in this idea of, personal sovereignty. And sometimes for good reason, right? Because maybe your personal power has been violated, or you haven't done a good job advocating for yourself in life. And so these words like personal sovereignty and personal empowerment, they become important. But there's other times, as I'm sure you all can understand this, there's other times where when people are first trying to figure out what sovereignty or empowerment or assertiveness looks like, they like overcompensate and end up like bulldozing people and sort of, burning bridges because they don't know how to embody that energy it's new to them maybe, and so they go too far. So I would be careful of something like that around this particular Kazemi because of the signature of an exalted sun and Mercury at the heart of that exalted sun with Mars, Saturn in the background as the ruler. That's a lot, you know. But at any rate, let's go on and discuss more of the other significations here. When Mercury separates from the sun after the Kazemi and it starts rising as the morning star, it starts to bring forth with a little bit more distance, you know, not so much the supercharged moment of the Kazemi. It starts to bring forth something new, whether that's it could be anything because it sounds generic. Oh, it can bring forth something new, but you have to look at the area of your birth chart that's represented by Aries. And you have to think about things that are Aries-like. Mars ruled things in particular that have to do with the mind, speech, psychology, environment, intelligence, knowledge, stuff like that. Trade, sale, commerce, all Mercury significations. But then look at the area of your birth chart as well, right? Anyway, so those are some of the things that are coming forth from this Kazemi. But what makes it so potent is the fact that it is coming off from a solar eclipse and we're just about to hit a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, which is a rare configuration that is also very dynamic. So, second thing on my list to discuss today is that this Mercury Kazemi is happening while in the bound and domicile of Mars. So it's not only in the domicile of Mars, Aries is the domicile of Mars, but it's also in the bound of Mars, the certain degrees of the sign of Aries that are also ruled by Mars. So that gives Mars a lot of power. And we have to remember that Mars is just separating from a conjunction with Saturn. So if we think about the Mars-Saturn conjunction as a pressure cooker, as a moment of maturation where the will has to develop greater maturity, discernment, fortitude, or you have to work through some kind of frustration or limitation or block or impediment, that's in the background of this Mercury Kazemi. And that's a really good thing because the fact that Mars is separating from that Saturn and rules this Kazemi moment could mean that whatever we just encountered, the frustration, the impediment, the challenge of our will, the challenge to mature, that encounter is now launching us forward in a new direction. And that we have this reset, rebirth moment of Mercury in Aries, and just as Mars is separating from Saturn, says to me that encounter is fueling what we do next, and that there's going to be this confident surge of very decisive, action-oriented energy that in some ways, maybe the solar eclipse has been waiting on this moment before it can really take off. Because a solar eclipse was ruled by Mars, and Mars had to go through this conjunction with Saturn first. It does so, and then Mercury's Kazemi. Mercury's Kazemi ruled in the bound and domicile of Mars, who's just clearing Saturn, right? So that feels like momentum or a decisive action that we've arrived at because of what we just encountered. And we thought about it, and now we're like, okay, now I know what I have to do based on what I just encountered. So that is really interesting. Of course, what is following very closely upon this is that Jupiter and Uranus are about to conjoin. We are like 10 days away. So Mercury's Kazemi, just after Mars separates from Saturn, kind of fuels this step forward that maybe the solar eclipse was also indicating, but waiting for. And then Jupiter and Uranus, this another very revolutionary energy, one that wants to create breakthroughs and openings and wants to revolutionize and expand. That energy comes right on the heels of this. It can't be lost on us because Mars and Saturn just separating are in the bound and domicile of Jupiter, who's about to conjoin Uranus. So it's a little tapestry where these interconnections are all part of the same story this month. So that revolution, in other words, that we're about to experience with Jupiter Uranus is intimately connected to the solar eclipse in Aries. And the fact that Mars, the ruler, had to go through Saturn right as it does. Mercury's Kazemi sort of hits this reset. Mars gets clear of Saturn. And now we're about to hit the Jupiter-Uranus moment. So you can feel that. Number four, which I find really interesting, is that Mercury's retrograde right after this. And I'm going to put the chart back up on the screen so that I can show this to you. Right after this occurs, Mercury will head. So by April 14th into the 15th, that's Sunday into Monday of this week, Mercury will then conjoin Chiron, who was at the heart of the eclipse. So it meets that. It meets that Chiron, that healing element in Aries. And a lot of this has to do with the kind of healing, the wounded healer archetype around Mars stuff. And then that's intimately related to the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic that's coming through. So, wow. I mean, just, you know, what are we doing for the sake of this greater peace or stability or beauty or the sort of Taurian Venusian things that we desire? There's some turbulence and some real fire behind the conjunction. It looks very Venusian, but it's got all of this Marsy energy fueling it, which you don't necessarily see unless you look a little deeper at the surrounding events like this. Anyway, so Mercury conjoins Chiron. Seems like it's then bringing forth, as it's now recovering and starting to move into the morning star position, it hits Chiron. The next thing it does is it heads into a conjunction with Venus. So the conjunction with Venus happens April 19th, exactly as Jupiter and Uranus are conjoining in Taurus, Venus being the ruler. So, and at that point, Mercury is now about to appear as the morning star. I think all of this bodes very well in terms of this Mercury Kazemi being the start of the process of breakthrough that this month is really all about with Jupiter and Uranus. But I hope that in laying these details out, you were able to follow along and understand more about the overall process that this Kazemi is located in and how, what a critical moment it is. So what can I tell you in terms of, aside from all these archetypes you could look for, just pay attention to what's happening, because we have, as students of astrology, we have an incredible moment in front of us where we can learn so much about a Kazemi with an exalted sun, about a Kazemi with an exalted sun ruled by a Mars that's just separating from Saturn. When you pay attention to those things and just watch, don't try to plan or predict necessarily, just you know where the weather is heading symbolically, just watch now and then take it in, and we're going to be the benefactors of some really amazing learning as students of astrology, and obviously the way in which it's going to impact our lives personally for the sake of personal growth and healing should also be quite profound. Remember though, this is Jupiter-Uranus is quite revolutionary. Like, the dynamics of Jupiter-Uranus they spark major revolutions. In the collective, they've been associated with eras of tremendous revolutionary upheaval and impulses culturally, politically, etc. Well, that's true for our personal lives as well. Even though it's in Taurus, a nice peaceful looking earth sign, don't miss all the fire, you know, don't miss the Mars-Saturn conjunction in Pisces. There are turbulent, deep, complex places that we're working through in the next days and weeks as this conjunction comes through. I'll tell you one thing that's kind of exciting is that May gets a lot, May has the look and feel of a much easier astrological space. So it's interesting because this month is really turbulent. Things really seem to smooth out when you get Venus and the sun in Taurus, and you get a new moon with an exalted moon in Taurus, and Jupiter and Uranus are still there. And like things will smooth out. But this month is, it's interesting, all the fire that's behind the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic coming up. So we'll see how that plays out. Anyway, that's it for today. Hope you guys are having a good one. Stick around. After I sign off, you can hear me tell you more about the upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. All I can tell you is that studying astrology is profoundly life-changing. It gives you a spiritual practice that lasts a lifetime. It gives you a tool that you can use for yourself, your friends, and family. When you learn the language at a deeper level, you're also not totally reliant or dependent upon people like myself. I mean, I want you all to watch my channel, but it's also really important that you be able to develop your own hermeneutics, that you can develop a relationship with these symbols in your life, because that's when it becomes the most powerful. And then you can take in the astrologers you like while also continuing to refine and develop your own ability to read and work with these signs and symbols. And for some of you, going professional is also something that you should consider doing. Look, if you love this and you're always thinking astrology, chances are, even if you do it part-time, that doing some readings for other people is a skill. Maybe you don't think you have it, maybe you don't believe you have it, but if you try to develop it a little bit, you'll find out that you know a lot about astrology, and a lot of people that are in your life might be able to benefit from that at some point, even if you just do it for friends. But anyway, we have lots of people that come through the program, so stick around to learn more about it. That's it for today. See you again later. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, not unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language. And we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play it. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, you know, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, you know, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. It's available all the way up to the start of the program. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.